Thank you. That was a mean title to make a moderator go through, so I appreciate that. That saved me 20 seconds or so to get through it. So thank you all for coming this afternoon. Because this is a pretty varied session, I also gave some background on flu for those of you who aren't that aware, but it's a virus that can cause respiratory illness every fall and winter, and we estimate that there are between 9 million and 36 million illnesses each year. It also can cause severe disease in some groups, and we estimate there are between 140,000 and about 700,000 hospitalizations a year and around 12,000 to 56,000 deaths. So it has pretty large public health impact. And it's best prevented through an annual influenza vaccination, although the effectiveness of that varies year to year. We're also worried beyond just the regular seasonal viruses that circulate for novel influenza virus. And this is a subtype of influenza A that's different from those that are circulating among humans each year. And novel subtypes can include H5, H7, H9. You might have heard of those in the news, especially the H7 outbreak occurring in China this year has reached pretty large numbers. But you can also get a novel flu that's H1 or H3 subtypes, and those are the subtypes that are circulating each year among people. And they're considered novel if they either originate from a non-human species or there's a reassortment between animal and human viruses, so it makes it look different than what we're seeing circulate every year. And we're really worried about these novel flus because they can result in pandemics when they emerge in a human population and can transmit efficiently person to person. In the U.S., our typical novel flu detections are from contact with swine, and we denote those if they occur by adding the letter V to the end of the subtype, and we do that to help not confuse the public that these are swine flu viruses. You might remember in 2009, there was a lot of media around swine flu, and people stopped eating pork and avoided people who worked with pigs for that reason, and so we wanted to try to get rid of that stigma and have added a V, which is a little hard to communicate to people. But so if you hear of H1N1V or H3N2V, these are types of flu that people have gotten from going to agricultural fairs or being exposed to pigs. And in the U.S., most of our cases are linked to exposure to infected swine. We've had very limited human-to-human transmission of these cases. And so when we're thinking of how we can monitor groups that are exposed to novel influenza, either people who go to these fairs or workers who are maybe depopulating flocks of chickens who have avian influenza, it's really complicated to think about how we monitor those groups. You either have to do traditional monitoring, which is phone calls, if you want to do active monitoring, which can really take a lot of resources at the state and local level to do and are really time-consuming. And so we've been working to develop a short message service, or SMS, a system to monitor people for symptoms of influenza who are in these exposed populations. So we initially piloted this among health department staff in Colorado, Idaho, Texas, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and that really was among the staff of the health department where we just sent daily text messages to them asking if they had illness. And we did this to just see how it worked, what the reports looked like, if the staff at these health departments liked it, and what they suggested we do to improve it. But we never really previously deployed this in a real outbreak situation. Luckily for us, or not lucky for us, flu, as it always does, presented us an opportunity to test this system in a real-life situation in 2016. So on August 4th, our first case of H3N2V was reported in Michigan, followed on the next day by a second case being reported, and also a second fair where we had ill swine. A few days later, after talking with us, Michigan requested an EpiAid. They had, as I mentioned, been part of the pilot of this system earlier, and they remembered it and reached out to us and asked if we would be willing to test it in this outbreak situation that they were facing to see if we could really help monitor the groups of exhibitors who were at these fairs. Rarely does CDC get asked to have an EpiAid, so it was a nice feeling where we weren't trying to push states into one, and of course, we decided to go, and also in the process had a third case reported and three more suspect cases, so it looked like the outbreak was picking up, and we left on to go on August 11th. So when we got to Michigan, we really had to think about how we were going to deploy this in the fairs, and so we ended up selecting 9 fares. 2 of those fares had cases that were already detected, so they had H3N2V at the fare, and then 7 of the fares were prospective fares that were going to be ongoing while we were in the state. At these fairs, we sent emails to youth agricultural club coordinators, and these are groups like 4-H, our Future Farmers of America, FFA. They really exhibit a lot of different animals or plants or make baked goods at these fairs. They're at the fair constantly, and they have a lot of exposure, so we targeted those groups because they had the most risk of illness. And we sent emails to all of the exhibitor families asking them to enroll in this tech system. We also attended exhibitor meetings, distributed flyers. It kind of varied by fair and what the fair was comfortable with us doing. And we also assigned each fair a unique code in the system, like barn, farm, derby. These were got a little hokey, and we regretted the decision to use farm terms by the end of it, but it did allow us to identify each fair separately with the respondents, which allowed us to connect it to county public health, who was going to do the follow-up for ill people. So this is just a quick overview of the actual daily text, but every day they got a question asking if they had symptoms that were consistent with flu. Were they be asked to reply yes or no? If they said no, we thanked them and then told them if they had someone develop symptoms to text phone back, and if they did that, the county would get an alert that someone was needing a call. If they said yes, we let them know that the health department was going to be calling them back to learn more about their illness and to seek care immediately if they had serious illness. You know, we wanted to make sure people weren't using this as their kind of access to healthcare information, and if they were feeling like they needed to go to the doctor, that we didn't stop that from happening. If we had no answer, we sent a reminder text at 6 p.m., so to try to increase a response. If we had any yeses or if we had any responses that didn't make sense, all of those immediately got reported to the local health department. We pre-identified contacts who wanted to get this. And then every night around midnight, they got a summary, line list as well, that let them know all of the no's that they got. Follow-up and testing was done by the county health departments, who had all agreed to this before we went in and worked with the fair. We provided guidance for follow-up and testing, and we handled any suspect cases per their novel influenza protocol. Since this is nationally notifiable, we already have those forms in place. So the results, we had 9 fairs with about 1,000 exhibitors attending those fairs. Out of those exhibitor families, we had 87 enroll, which represented about 392 people in active daily surveillance. This graph shows you the respondent retention, so the number of respondents is on the y-axis, and then the day during the fair or the day post-fair is on the x-axis. And so you can see that the number of respondents kind of peaks on day 3 of the fair and then slowly drops off, and by day 10 you have those really robust responders who are really compliant people who are still responding to our daily text. So we do see a fair amount of drop-off each day that this goes on. If you know infectious disease, we love pyramids of burden, so I had to put one in, but we monitored 392 people. We got 22 illness alerts, which was about 6% of our population under monitoring. 9 of those that said that they were sick ended up seeking care. So after they talked with the health department, we were able to convince about 40% of those people to seek care. Of those who sought care, about half were tested. Out of those 5 we tested, we found 2 H3N2V cases that we wouldn't have found if we hadn't had this monitoring system in place. Of those 13 that didn't seek care, so these are people that are still being missed even though we knew they were ill, 2 were because the health department couldn't reach them. 1, the medical director of the county instructed against seeking care. 1 declined because of cost. 1 declined because they thought they had another diagnosis. And 8 declined without giving a reason, and we couldn't get a clear answer from them. This shows you the graph of the epi curve with the 2 cases in green that were found with the system, and you can see we found cases that were towards the end of the outbreak because that's when we arrived there. But we were pretty happy with finding 2 of those cases, which represented about 17% of all the total cases in Michigan. So the conclusions are we were successfully able to deploy a newly developed text-based illness monitoring system during an ongoing outbreak of H3N2V infections. We set this up pretty rapidly and were able to get it deployed and to get buy-in from health departments and the fairs and within a week, which was pretty quick. We detected two of the 12 cases in Michigan using the text illness monitoring system. But few participants with reports of illness were tested. So I think what's really important to emphasize with this is that it's a tool to help find people, but there's still a lot of work to go into getting people tested. And these cases of variant flu, and probably if we had avian influenza in this country, occur in pretty rural areas. And so finding testing for these people was pretty difficult if they didn't have insurance or if the health departments didn't have a relationship with a hospital or other provider in the area. A lot of people were going to have to pay out of pocket or have their insurance pay to get tested, which was a real barrier for this group. And so it caused some of this to be difficult to get tested. And texting really only gets you your illness found. It doesn't help you with the follow-up on that. We think future applications of this system could benefit from enhanced enrollment techniques. You could see we only had about 10% of the families choose to enroll in this system, and also to help think about how we can make follow-up and testing more feasible, because those were parts that really declined as well, as long as how many days do we really need to do this, since respondents kind of dropped off each day that we were doing it. This was a large investigation, as you can imagine, with this many counties involved, fair agricultural people there. I also really want to thank Becky Schicker, who is the EIS officer that did this investigation. He was unable to travel here today, and so I'm presenting on her behalf. But really, all of these partners made this pilot and evaluation possible, so I really want to thank them for allowing us to come. So thank you.